It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your voicemails, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-272-9461.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Good evening to the listening audiences in Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, and beyond. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. We're really excited about tonight's program, so let's get to it. Tonight, we have four fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Ms. Aquilin Kennedy.
Good evening, everyone.
President of Kennedy Strategic Communications. The second joining us in studio is Dr. Gary Grandison, who is a former coach of the Alabama State University golf team, the former coach of the Texas Southern University golf team, who happens to be the 2022 SWAC champions in both men and women's golf. The third, joining us by phone in the bottom half of the hour, is Mr. Scott Hottenstein, who's the president of the Democratic Public Education Caucus of Florida. And last, but not least, is Mr. Charlie Moss.
Glad to be here.
Who is working the production board and keeping Kennedy for Alabama sounding good on the airwaves. Now for the headlines. The first headline comes from SportsIllustrated.com. It reads, Tommy Tuberville is leading the latest congressional push for NIL regulation. It was written by Ross Dellinger and published on August 3rd, 2022. The second headline comes from AL.com. It reads, Alabama Democrats elect Randy Kelly. It was written by Mike Kaysen and published on August 13th, 2022. The final headline comes from Fox News. It reads, Florida Governor DeSantis proposes bonuses for retired police officers to fill vacant teacher positions. This article was written by Danielle Wallace and published on August 17th, 2022. So, we are at the beginning of another school year. What do you think about that?
It's an exciting time for many.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when Aquilin and I were talking about the show this morning, she has a tendency to think in terms of themes, and she brought up that really what we're talking about here is just back to school in general.
You're actually giving me some credit. You go ahead. Okay.
You know, I know when Aquilin in her role as president of Kennedy Strategic Communications feels the need to assert her authority, you end up with things like her inserting into the radio program to let me know that I am merely the talent. And she is actually the leadership that's running this Kennedy Strategic Communications brand. But thank you for that, Aquilin. I really do appreciate that extra insight for our listening audience. Having said that, yes, as we go back into school, sure, we spend a lot of time talking about things that are happening with students in the classroom. And I'm sure you and I'll get to talk about that a little bit. But one of the things that we don't spend as much time talking about, at least within the political talk show space, is the student athlete. And how everything ultimately ends up impacting them. So, Dr. Grandison, if you would, before we get into the nuts and bolts of the discussion tonight, take a little bit of time to tell the listening audience a little bit about your background, where you grew up, where you went to school, and how it was you became interested in golf.
Well, I was fortunate to grow up in the High Point community of Pritchard, Alabama, and grew up on the ninth hole of a golf course called Pritchard Municipal Golf Course at the time, and eventually became the High Point Golf Club. Mm-hmm. And it exposed me to the game. In fact, Jimmy Green was one that introduced me to the game.
Yes.
When he lived in the neighborhood. And eventually, I went on to play college golf at Alabama State and played there, and went on to intern at places like the PGA Tour and mm-hmm. Nike Golf and mm-hmm. other areas, and had a great experience, and went on to graduate studies and became a professor. And lo and behold, a guy by the name of Ron Dickerson was the athletic director at Alabama State and called me in to help him to revive the golf program. They were under probation on the men's side and had an APR score of 783.
Wow.
Was the number, and I didn't know what it meant at the time, and then I eventually learned, oh, we were in trouble. So we had to turn things around, and the rest is history.
As they say. So there are a couple of things there that I just kind of want to tease out. So the first is you mentioned the name Jimmy Green. For those in the listening audience who may not be familiar with that name, he was a PGA-level golfer that we actually met while we were still in elementary school. And he was living in the High Point community. I believe his father was the general manager of the golf course there. And so it's just interesting to hear and think back to playing baseball at the park and meeting a guy who said when he grew up he wanted to be a professional golfer and actually ended up making that happen. So shout out to Jimmy Green.
Yes.
The second thing is just to go through your credentials so everybody understands what it is you're bringing to this conversation. So you went to undergrad at Alabama State.
Yes.
Which is a historically black college and university that's in the Montgomery area.
Yes.
And then for your master's degree and your doctorate, where did you go to school?
To the United States Sports Academy in Daphne, Alabama.
All right. Shout out to our friends on the Baldwin County side.
Yes.
And what is your academic degree in?
Sport management. The emphasis in sport marketing.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking a step back on that. So you're at Alabama State. You're on staff. You're actually teaching at the time in the classroom. And I know you did some administration level work as the interim department chair. So what was it that made you want to make that transition into college coaching?
Again, Ron Dickerson, he's a Hall of Famer of his own. He was the second African-American head football coach. In Division One. And some people claim he was the first, but he was actually the second, and what he tells me. But he was the athletic director at Alabama State, and he called me in, and he needed help. It was a program I played for, so I looked at it as an opportunity, and it took about a week. I recognized they let the wrong person get this position because my aspiration was much higher than just reviving the academic program, the element of the program. I wanted to build a championship program.
Absolutely. And I think this is one of the things that is very important when we talk about mentoring the next generation of leaders, that we end up with these platforms. Right? So sometimes it's within the four walls of the academic classroom. Sometimes it's an extracurricular activity. And other times it ends up being a sports activity. And so I find it fascinating that you weren't simply satisfied with the notion of going from being in some sort of probationary status to coming off probation, you actually had a vision for winning championships.
Yes.
How did that go over when you first started having those conversations with the kids?
Well, the kids bought in because they, on the Division I level, everybody wants to be a PGA Tour professional.
Sure.
So they bought in. They bought into the academics side. I expect them to go for an A in every class. Mm-hmm. I said, let's throw away what you did in the past. You go for an A. If you fall short, you make a B.
Mm-hmm.
And so this concept of C's and even failing courses, it shouldn't be a problem. And so I eventually established a concept where I expected my students' GPAs to be at least 3.2, because if you fail short in 80% of your classes with B's, you know, take that 1A on equally rated classes, you end up with a 3.2 GPA. So that was the minimum standard, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
My GPAs were constantly above 3.5 as a team GPA, because those were the expectations. What I learned was the attitude and effort with academics usually translated into the attitude and effort in golf. So actually, athletic performances improved because it was more, of course, the game is mental on the higher levels.
Sure.
So we're only limited by expectations. So I emphatically focused on, hey, you need to go for an A in every class.
And, no, that's absolutely amazing, and it is a testament to one of the things that we talk about as we're looking to transform culture is no excuses, strict accountability, and standards that are high. So, okay, so you go on to the coaching staff after you've been recruited. You establish your standards for what it is that you want from the team. Just kind of walk us through this path from the transition off of probation to the point at which you were winning SWAC championships.
It took 2 years for us to get in contention.
Okay.
We started in 07. We, in 09, my little freshman. His name is John Montgomery. He won the conference as a freshman. We lost okay. by three shots.
Okay.
The next year, you know, we lost by three shots. That was 2010, 2011. The women's team won the championship. 2012, okay. The men's team won championship. And then from there, both teams began winning at a clip of, I think, four or five in a row. But both teams won the championships, and it just took off from there. But we were competitive on a national level by 2015.
Wow, wow.
We were dangerous.
That is amazing. So one of the things is that our listeners here at FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile, 93.1 in Montgomery, and WVNN in Huntsville, it tends to be a conservative audience. Mm-hmm. So a lot of folks who are listening may not understand what a HBCU is, and they may not be familiar with the SWAC as a conference.
Yes.
Can you just take a moment and explain those two just so that they can put it in context of how significant that accomplishment is?
Well, historically, Black College was established around the period of slavery because they were not allowed to get an education. In fact, they were
sure.
actually, people were killed for trying to learn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so historically, Black Colleges was part of the initiative to better educate slaves and eventually anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it's labeled historical
right.
Black Colleges, because
right.
historically they were. And but the students come from all over the world and gain a unique educational experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, very competitive educational programs in many regards.
Absolutely.
In terms of the actual teaching that's allowed and the opportunities, the chances to develop as people. And my players came from all over the
yes.
globe.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you for doing that, and I have mm-hmm. to shout out my lovely wife, mm-hmm. Aquilin Kennedy, who is a proud graduate of Spelman.
Very proud and very thankful for a shout out. Thank you.
Indeed, indeed.
Yes.
Okay, so, well, thank you for that on your background.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to transition and reference the initial headline. So we were talking about Senator Tuberville, given his background as a coach in what people will refer to as a revenue-generating sport, has taken an interest in making sure that there's some legislation that works its way through Congress to establish a federal standard for NIL, which stands for name, image, and likeness. So just kind of opening it up, what are your thoughts about NIL and how not only has it impacted revenue-generating sports, but additional sports that are in the non-revenue-generating category?
Well, name, image, and likeness is a game changer. We know those who are deeply rooted in sports, and the revenue sports, they were paying players more than likely. I'll just say safely.
In quotes.
That's right. More than likely. It just opened the field up to be more transparent. And we're speaking more again about revenue sports.
Sure.
And but it also opens up opportunities and thought processes for the non-revenue sports in terms of, hey, you're a student athlete. If you can market yourself adequately and you can actually make a living in marketing yourself. And
mm-hmm.
most athletes are not going to develop into professional athletes that
sure.
actually earn a living as a professional. So in terms of playing that sport. So why not open up an avenue where they can use their creativity and create opportunities based on their name, image, and likeness? The problem lies is that there's a lack of regulation going on in the
okay.
space.
Okay.
So it gives room for people to really create loopholes
right.
among the revenue sports. Right now, on the non-revenue side, it doesn't. I'm not aware of any problems
okay.
with name, image, and likeness of the few individuals who can take advantage of the opportunity.
Sure.
But in terms of the Power Five conference and the larger institutions,
mm-hmm.
they have unlimited resources. And
right.
I can tell you stories of even on the golf side when you know, golf programs have budgets and have projects going on that are more than most Division I programs' entire athletic budget.
Oh, wow.
And that's golf.
Mm-hmm.
So it's crazy how much resources are available to these larger institutions. So they can take rules of such as within the name, image, and likeness space, and
mm-hmm.
they can create problems.
You know, no, it's interesting. So first of all, just for clarification for the audience, when we're talking about revenue generating sports, we're talking about the big ones, football, basketball. When we talk about non-revenue generating sports, those are sports programs that are historically supported by the excess that's coming from the revenue generating sports. So think about things like gymnastics, for example, or volleyball, or in the course of the conversation we're having right now, golf. Is that fair, the way that I describe that?
For the most part. Okay. And, you know, of course, my background is in sport management, so mm-hmm. I understand that even football pretty much pays bills in terms of covering their expenses and covering some of the expenses of non-revenue sports. But the high majority of even football programs do not really generate revenues. Okay. They cover their expenses usually.
I got you.
And again, you have your few with that. When it comes down to TV rights programs,
it changes everything, doesn't it?
Those are the programs that actually gain and gain mm-hmm. excess in terms of returns on their investment in terms of sheer earnings.
Gotcha. I gotcha. But
the majority of programs in athletics, truth being told, the stronger programs cover their expenses.
I got you.
Through football. You can, of course, you can doctor up numbers and account for and paint different pictures.
Of course.
But the reality is it's more of a promotional tool for the institution.
Okay. All right. So there's actually one other thing that I want to touch on from your coaching perspective, and then I actually want to segue and talk a little bit about your academics and what you have done, and from a research standpoint, how that research has been applied. Probably within the last few years, there have been a number of major social justice types of initiatives that have kind of been swirling around. The one that people kind of identify as a watershed moment would have been the murder of George Floyd. Mm-hmm. And so we know subsequent to that, people started to develop expectations of folks in the business community, as well as coaches, to have a role in and I'll call it the social justice movement. So what was your experience, you know, what was happening either at Alabama State or Texas Southern with the expectations of you, expectations of the golfers, et cetera, et cetera?
My responsibility is the development of my student athletes. So I made sure that I made my athletes aware of different dynamics. Again, my athletes come from all over the world. So I wanted to make sure I understood some of their viewpoints on some of these social issues. And at the same time, I shared with them other viewpoints.
Sure, sure.
And then some facts. It's a case in point. We talk about social issues. Right now in golf, there's a battle between the PGA Tour and this new league, the LIV.
Absolutely.
Golf. And I'm so thankful that, you know, Stephen A. Smith, I think a day or two ago, brought out a major point. When you read the literature from the media, they're labeling the LIV Golf Tour is Saudi-backed.
Gotcha.
And, you know, the people that defect to the LIV Tour are rebels, and mm-hmm, mm-hmm. they're labeling them. But Stephen A. Smith brought out a point that Saudi Arabia is our number two business partner in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's like, that right, doesn't make right. sense. And so it's just about, you know, of course, pictures are being painted as one side is bad, one side is good.
Sure.
But reality is different.
Mm-hmm.
And so another point, Charles Barkley, when he went to interview for a position and was considering leaving TNT.
Yes, yes.
You know, he brought out a point. Here's like, we were talking about the problems going on in Saudi Arabia, but we have to deal with social issues and abuse issues and terrorist issues in our own country.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not taking those serious. And so we really need to look at what's, you know, different viewpoints.
Right.
But let's put the facts together. I mean, mm-hmm. do we have terrorist issues in the United States? Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm.
Among Americans. I'm not speaking about outsiders coming in and invading. I'm saying among Americans, there are terrorist issues that occur.
Sure. And I think the thread that I wanted to pull before I segue over to your research interests is we often talk about, as a quote, the money always wins.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting that any of the various issues that you talk about, when someone's trying to paint a moral picture of what's happening, you know, for how someone ends up earning a livelihood, they invariably end up demonizing the person who's coming to the table with the most money.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the LIV version of the PGA Tour was backed by someone who did not have resources, think about the NFL versus the XFL versus the USFL versus the recent professional network they tried to have here in Mobile that ended up going bankrupt. It would be completely different if they were coming with the amount of resources that that LIV is bringing as well. So,
amen.
Let me transition right quick. So, as you were going through your graduate school programs through your terminal degree at the doctoral level, you had a research focus area.
Yes.
Can you just take a minute and explain what that research focus area was?
Impoverished youth in sport.
Okay.
Those managers of youth sport, those directors, those coaches, those
mm-hmm.
you know, assistants, those adults that usually supervise youth and adolescents, they are powerful. Now, my research was looking into how powerful are they? What level of influence do they have among the impoverished?
Okay.
You know, and typically there's some dynamics among those that are impoverished, especially in our community.
Sure.
And there's some demographics and some psychographics that are mm-hmm. Engaged with this population, part of the population.
Sure.
And, you know, I was fascinated with digging into, you know, what's the level of influence.
So if we talked about this from the perspective of what you learned,
mm-hmm.
right? What was, just give me one example of something that was eye-opening to you as something that you learned through the course of doing your research.
I honestly say it was an eye-opening. It's just a topic that really hasn't been studied from an empirical perspective.
Sure.
It's you've seen television shows, movies that relate it to when mm-hmm. those individuals get engaged, they can make a significant impact. It's just, are there empirical studies on
right.
the debt,
I guess,
especially
you.
Among the impoverished.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in general, it's a different story. And I was amazed that it really wasn't studied in depth. I was amazed. I'm like, something so important.
the thread that I'd like to pull here for just a minute is this distinction between impoverished
yes.
and individuals who have resources.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost as if to say, you know, we grew up in Pritchard,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, we are playing football at High Point Park,
yes.
right? That our experience there and how we view those coaches may have been different than somebody in another part of Mobile proper who is, you know, in a sports system that had more
resources.
Financial resources.
Amen.
Wow. Well,
mm-hmm.
well, hey, we're actually coming to the end of the segment here. So if folks want to learn more about you, they'd like to learn more about your research interests or any of the other projects that you're going to be working on now that you've relocated home, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Well, they can contact me probably on Instagram. You can look me up on Instagram under GG Viewpoint.
Okay.
And that's probably one of the better methods.
Yep. That's the beautiful thing about social media is that they can actually end up contacting you that way.
That's right.
All right.
And I'd like to give a shout out to Tracy Walters. And Walters has been a classmate of mine since elementary school.
Yes.
And,
yes.
It's my buddy. Her birthday was Saturday.
And definitely
celebrated it.
Shouting out Tracy. And happy belated birthday to you, Tracy. And we hope that you had an absolutely wonderful birthday. And we're wishing you many, many more.
Yes.
All right. Well, that is Dr. Gary Grandison, who the one thing that I did not mention was the 2022 HBCU Golf Coach of the Year. Congratulations on that particular accolade. Congratulations on coaching both of your schools to the SWAC championship, and we will be eagerly anticipating whatever it is your next announcement is. So thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
All right. So for those of you who may just now be catching us here at the end of this segment, we spent the last 20 minutes or so talking to Dr. Gary Grandison, who is a native of Pritchard, Alabama, who graduated from Alabama State University and ultimately got his doctorate from the United States Sports Academy. So with that, we are going to go to our bottom half of the hour break, and then we will see you on the other side where we have our second guest of the evening. You're listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, Success.com.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market. Specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications, Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
What do business, municipality, government, and nonprofit leaders have in common? The desire to win, to fulfill the mission for the benefit of their customers and constituents. That's why they call us at Kennedy Strategic Communication. At KSC, we help our clients develop strategies for targeting and converting their target markets. We provide branding, public relations, marketing, advertising, executive coaching, campaign and political support, and other business services. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the episode tonight. We just finished a very, very informative segment with Dr. Gary Grandison. Definitely want to shout him out and thank him for spending a little bit of time with us. So with that, we're actually going to go to the phone lines, and we're going to see if we have our second guest of the evening. Mr. Hottenstein, are you on?
I am. Thank you for having me tonight.
Oh, thank you so much for responding to my panic text asking whether or not you would be available to support us tonight. How are you and the rest of the Hottensteins doing?
We are doing good. So this is the first year where back to school for us only included the adults.
Okay.
Both the kids are out of high school. My wife went back August 10th. She's a school counselor. And in my spare time from my president of the Public Education Caucus, I do substitute teaching, and my first day was today. And
oh, wow. Okay.
Awesome.
So is that why you weren't answering the phone when I called you earlier?
That's exactly why.
All right. Well, it's good to see you modeling the behavior that you expect of your students.
Absolutely.
So hey, before we get into the nuts and bolts of the topic tonight, can you take a minute and let the listening audience know just a little bit about your background, and in particular, the transition that caused you to go into teaching?
So, yeah, I'm actually a Naval Academy classmate of Robert. We graduated from Annapolis in 1992, and after that, I served my country in the Navy for 20 years, had command posts, various deployments, and at the end of my career, I turned down some six-figure defense contracting jobs and became a 7th grade civics teacher in Hillsborough County, Florida, for like $37,000 a year. And I did that from 2013 until 2019. Along the way, I ran for office twice, once for school board, and then again for state representative. And as I was getting ready to come back to teach, after my state representative run, there was a situation where it turned out that my principal lied to my face. And it was a easily verifiable lie. And integrity being a big thing for my Navy days, I resigned from that job and went into advocacy full time.
All right. Well, thank you for that background. I want to star the issue of your transition from teaching full-time, because I think that's going to be an interesting exploration given the way that we want this conversation to proceed tonight. So one of the things that a listener may be trying to figure out is why on FM Talk 106.5 would I be talking to a person with education experience in the state of Florida? And just to kind of level set, there are two reasons for that. The listening audience here is not only in Alabama. We actually have Escambia County in our listening area as well. But perhaps more important than that, the issues of teacher retention, of teachers leaving the profession, are issues that are impacting teachers across the country. And so I thought it would be nice to have somebody who's in the advocacy space kind of help us as we work our way through the various issues and consider the various options. So with that, the broader topic that was identified in the headline that I read at the beginning of the show is that there are an enormous amount of teacher vacancies in the state of Florida. There are teacher vacancies in the state of Alabama, and it's a common issue throughout the nation. So from your perspective, what do you believe the root causes of teacher defection is, and why is it so hard to be able to get more teachers to start their career journey in that profession?
So first off, I want to say hi to everyone in Escambia and Santa Rosa counties, if you're listening in. And when it comes to the teacher shortage here in Florida, we have about 9,000 vacancies for educators.
Wow.
And I did a little research. There's 114 vacancies in Escambia County and 77 teacher vacancies or educator vacancies in Santa Rosa County.
Mm.
So the lack of teachers affects hundreds, if not thousands, of students just in the western part of Florida.
Oh, wow.
Now, the best analogy that I've heard about the teacher shortage is that it's really not a shortage.
Okay.
So if you go and say, hey, I want to go have a nice steak dinner for $4, and you can't find a nice steak dinner for $4, that doesn't mean that there's a shortage of steak. So there are two things. Number one, teacher pay, especially in Florida, is really, really low. And the benefits are awful. Florida has the fourth largest economy in the country, but we're in the bottom five for teacher pay.
Gotcha.
In fact, teacher pay is down 7.4% over the last decade when you adjust for inflation. That's third worst in the nation.
Well, hey, Scott, let me pause you just for a second because I want to put this in context. So in the state of Alabama, during the last regular legislative session, there was a fairly substantial, and I say substantial in quotes, teacher pay increase. And it was something that was complimented on both the left and the right as an accomplishment relative to where we were before. Did anything similar happen in the state of Florida, or is it that the baseline was so low that anything that was done in the relatively recent short term was not significant enough to make a substantial impact?
Well, the key thing, as many families out there are learning over the past year, is inflation-adjusted dollars. So in Florida, they say we had a record level of funding because for the first time, per pupil funding is over $8,000 per student.
Okay.
But when you adjust it for inflation, it's actually 17.5% less than what the per pupil funding was in 2007, 2008, before the Great Recession. So in terms of just dollars, it might be a little higher, but in terms of what those dollars can purchase for you, in terms of the education experience, inflation eats into that, and so we're really behind the curve over the past 15, 20 years.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, so I see where you're coming with that. So we know where we are. And using your analogy, we want to get our Ruth's Chris steak for the same price that we would get something at Shake Shack, right? And so obviously that does not mean there's a shortage of steak in your analogy. So are you suggesting that there are enough qualified, credentialed individuals in the state of Florida with teaching experience to fill the open spots that you talked about? It's just that there are competitive pressures, there are other options that are better for them and their families at the individual level, and that is the root cause of the problem as you see it?
I think that teachers never get into the profession, and I use that word profession, that we might circle back to that here in a moment. But teachers don't get into the profession to become rich.
Gotcha.
They're perfectly happy eating at Shake Shack. But they don't want to go and just eat at Shake Shack if everyone in the restaurant is being rude to them.
Or they're yelling at them, or they're
telling them that they're eating their food the wrong way. And people who don't eat at Shake Shack come in and yell at them about eating at Shake Shack.
So
a lot of it is a lack of respect and micromanagement of the profession. I'm sure that I would still be a full-time teacher today if my principal didn't lie to me. But that's a deal breaker. I know a lot of great teachers. Let me say this. In 2019, so 3 years ago, probably 3.5 years now, I was a Teacher of the Year finalist in Hillsborough County. I was in the top five out of 2,000 teachers. 3 years later, none of us are full-time teaching in Hillsborough County anymore. One retired, three of us have quit, and one person moved out of the county and is now doing like an administrative job up by Gainesville.
You know, it was interesting when you and I talked about that offline, that resonated with me. And the reason why I thought it was worth highlighting in this conversation that we're having on the air is it's similar to any of the other issues that we talk about, whether it's the issue of law enforcement, whether it's the issue of the military, whether it's the issue of, you know, how people responded in the early days of COVID. For the most part, individuals' hearts are in the right place, and they are doing stuff for the right reason. So we support our teachers, we support our administrators, we support the people in government who are trying to take care of them. However, you can end up with these situations where one individual in your specific example did something that literally turned you off and put you in the position of saying you could not continue this. As you go through each of those individual stories with those five people who are in the consideration set for Teacher of the Year, I'm pretty confident that all of them would have some sort of story as what the straw was that broke the proverbial camel's back. So if you're not going to do it with actual dollars and cents, then it has to be done with respect for the professionalism of those individuals as a tool to kind of retain that talent.
Right. And one of the things that drew me to teaching after I retired from the Navy is that teaching is a profession like the military profession or the medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
There's training, there's standards, there's a community that holds itself accountable. And what we're seeing is attacks on the profession of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And that really means that students who see that and feel that in the classroom in high school or in college, they decide not to be education majors. So the pipeline starts drying up. The veteran teachers who have hung in, even despite the low pay, they're like, hey, you know, why go to Shake Shack and get yelled at?
Hey, Scott,
that's not worth it.
Scott, let me pause you for a second. We're going to go to a break, and then we're going to bring you back on the other side of the break, and we'll continue this conversation about professionalism and what it means to be treated like a professional in the education industry. So just hold on. We'll be back with you in a few minutes. So for the listening audience, we're going to go to our three-quarter of the hour break, pay a few bills, and then we will see you on the other side. You're listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, success.com. Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market, specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications. Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience.
experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. As we're going into the last break, we were continuing our conversation with Mr. Scott Hottenstein, who is a former naval officer who did a career in the Navy and then transitioned into the teaching profession. And so, Scott, are you still there?
I am.
So I actually want to tie this back to the headline article that I read at the beginning of the program, because I believe it's topical given the thread of conversation we were just having about professionalism. So Governor DeSantis a few weeks ago made a proposal that would allow veterans without a college degree to teach for some amount of time, let's call it one thread. And then more recently, there were some bonus incentives that were proposed that would allow first responders, police, firefighters, etc., to go into the classroom as well. So what are your thoughts on those, particularly being a veteran and having transitioned to the teaching profession? What are your thoughts about those proposals coming out of the governor's mansion?
I'm not very excited about those. The one law was passed this past year, and it was implemented July 1st, and that's allowing the veterans to come in without a degree.
Okay.
On a 5-year temporary certificate. The second one with the law enforcement and first responders, that's a proposal he made just a couple of days ago, a little bit north of here in Pasco County.
Okay.
You wouldn't have someone operate on you with half a medical degree, and we're going to have a surgeon coach him through the heart operation.
Okay.
And, yeah, teaching is different than maybe operating on a human being, but just by a matter, you know, it's the same thing, just a different subject.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the leadership skills, a lot of the doing things for yourself and working hard, all of that translated when I was an educator.
Okay.
But I had to learn that things were a lot different when I was a lieutenant commander and in command of a Navy Reserve Center, and I gave an order, I could be 99% sure that it was going to be followed. When you're in a middle school classroom and you say, let's take our notebooks out, you might get a 50% response rate.
Okay.
And that's a lot different than in the military. And you have to learn some things to be ready to deal with children and their development. And that's where knowing that stuff is critical in a classroom management situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think veterans, I use the Troops to Teachers program.
Okay.
And that was an awesome program, but it required you to get a bachelor's degree before you were in the classroom. And then it helped you get training before you were in the classroom.
I gotcha.
Not jump into the classroom and let's see if you could sink or swim.
You know, what I've often thought about as I was reflecting on that was the experience that we had when we were on staff at the Naval Academy, and you were a instructor in the Department of Leadership, Ethics, and Law, teaching basic and advanced leadership to undergraduate students. And then I came in a little later after having gone through a year of graduate education in the field of leadership education and development. And it was just interesting how over time our thought process has changed, and we were focused on individuals going through the early adult transition. And so if we require that much experience, that much time to learn to do that, when people are a little bit more settled, I can't imagine trying to deal with a seventh grade civics class, right, if you didn't have some sort of theoretical underpinning to influence how it is that you interact with those children.
And one of the things that we had at the Naval Academy that I was involved with and kind of co-chaired was we had every professor at the academy was either a military officer or they had a or the civilians had PhDs.
Mm-hmm.
And they were brilliant people. But we had a class on how to teach that we would give to these PhDs because just because you have a PhD in history doesn't mean that you have the skill set to translate that extensive knowledge that you have even to very motivated college students like midshipmen at the Naval Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So even at the academy with PhDs, we had to teach about teaching.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Scott, we're coming to the last 2 minutes of the show here. So my first thing is take a minute to remind the folks the organization that you're affiliated with and how to get in contact with the organization if they want to learn more about your advocacy.
So I'm the president of the Democratic Public Education Caucus of Florida. You can look us up at www.dpecf.org. We're on all the social media channels. Just look up dpecf.org. I also want to remind everyone in Florida, August 23rd, the primary is actually election day for a lot of school board races.
Mm-hmm.
So in Escambia, you've got three races, and two of them, maybe three of them, will be decided next Tuesday. Same thing in Santa Rosa, three school board races, two of them definitely will, one may also be decided. So go out there and research your pro-public education candidates and go vote for them.
All right. Well, thank you for that public service announcement for all of our listeners across the border there in Florida. And Scott, thank you so much for your time. You've been very gracious. Give our love to the rest of the Hodensteins.
I certainly will.
All right. Well, Aquilin, we have had quite a show this evening in our back-to-school theme.
Lots of back-to-school good news. And, yeah, it's going to be a great year.
Yeah, it definitely is going to be a great year. You know, it's interesting to think about as we come to the close of the show is it's the whole cycle of life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about the four walls and the commitment that we have made as a nation to educate our population.
Mm-hmm.
We do understand that we have some challenges, but one thing is not debatable. You can never pay a teacher enough for all they do, but you can definitely pay them too little.
You absolutely can. And another thing that's not debatable is what this has taught us over these last 2 years, respect.
Absolutely.
We need respect across the board, professions, individuals, across the board. If we just had more respect, we probably wouldn't be in the situation that we're in today.
And that will have to be the last word. So thank you guys for tuning in. And on a programming note, our show is moving from Thursday evening until Friday evening. So tune in next Friday at 6 o'clock p.m. to listen to us at Kennedy for Alabama.